Welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson, and today we're proving that no matter the odds, resilience rewrites the story. You're watching Now Media Television. This segment is about how Tony moved forward, built his businesses, and came an entrepreneur. So Tony, tell us about your beginnings.
Wow. I actually went to school wanting to be a pediatrician.
So wow, that's vastly different.
Yes, vastly different, as I'm in banking and finance. But what happened is I auditioned for a show while I was in school and was cast into a show, and I got that theater bug in my blood. And once you get the theater bug, it takes you to different places. And after I'd realized that I much preferred a life of stability and security, I ventured back into school. And my father had actually asked me to entertain the thought of mortgage banking because one of the neighbors was actually investing in second mortgages. And he thought it was a very lucrative field, and my father had invested in him. So I thought I would give it a shot. So I went and I tried mortgage banking, and I started out in second mortgages. I was with a company for 3 months, and they were shut down for fraud and racketeering. So it was a very troubled start to the industry. Fortunately, those of us who were young and just starting in the business were able to just go out and find new employment. So I went to a headhunter, and I started at a company called Stockton Watley Davin, which was the largest government lender in the southeastern United States at that time. I knew nothing in theory about mortgages, and I learned, and I had a manager who was willing to help me. But shortly after I joined, they merged into a company called Bank Boston. And I was there for 10 years. I was the number one producer in the United States. And they started to get considerably more corporate. I used to do everything myself. I ran my own approvals. I did everything because I was a builder-based guy, and the builder needed the approvals quickly. Well, the company felt that it was too risky to have me take that authority in my hands alone. So I left and I went to another company. It soon became Chase Manhattan. It started out as Margaretten, it merged to Chemical, it became Chase. I was there for 10 more years. I was also the number one producer in the United States for them. And they became so corporate. Every other day was a conference call, and I just felt that I was more results-based. I wanted to see things happen. So I went out on my own. I started out as a broker in a little executive suite and slowly developed the business, decided that I wanted to become a correspondent lender, which would be the next step after being a broker. And after I became a correspondent lender, the market crashed in 2008.
Oh, wow.
And what had happened was the reverse of what you would assume happened. My business flourished. Builders were still building homes, and all of my peers who were, in theory, the people with whom I competed for the business, found themselves without jobs, and they came to me. So overnight, we grew considerably. And now, instead of being five of us, there were 30 of us. That was my onset to actually running the company. Running a company of five is rather simplistic in theory. Running a company of 30 becomes a whole new problem.
Right.
Yes.
Laws, everything changed.
Considerably so. So I developed my own system, my pattern. I headed every category and every department in the company because we hadn't anyone else to do that. And we grew. And we grew and we grew. And then I decided now I wanted to become a mortgage bank. And my journey to become a mortgage bank began. And today we are a mortgage bank with several hundred employees. We're going to do several $1 billion this year in business. And we have accomplished what few thought would be possible based on the amount of leverage and assets that we had to work with at the time.
Impressive.
It's been quite a journey.
So tell me and our viewers, what one or two of the biggest challenges in growing from that 5 to 30 to now 700 several hundred employees. What is the biggest challenge in that for you as a leader?
Well, I'm a builder-based guy, which meant or means that I finance primarily for large builders. And it's important that when the builder comes to you to ask if you're able to help their borrower, you have to be able to provide every opportunity to put that borrower in that home. So I wanted to be as much as I could for every builder. So I wanted to start a non-QM division, which is everything that isn't traditional lending. When you hear people say FHA, VA, conventional lending, those are all traditional lending platforms. The non-QM is everything else. So in 2018, prior to the non-QM development, there was subprime prior to that, but we didn't actually engage in subprime. We brokered that to others. I decided to start a non-QM division. So we were premature, which was much to our advantage. So by 2019, we had the platform down, we had the department running and functioning, and we were able to perfect it. So by 2020, non-QM lending took off. So we were easily able to get ahead of the gang and become a leader in non-QM lending, of which today we are one of the top four non-QM lenders in the United States.
Congratulations.
Yes. So obstacles were abundant. We had COVID and we had the 2021 market change.
Oh, yeah.
It was a considerable, I would imagine, I thought I would likely lose the company during COVID. Because we went from 100 to zero overnight.
Oh, wow.
As many companies did. It was challenging, but it was presumed that it wouldn't last long. So everybody who was in my industry utilized their assets and or their servicing rights, whatever they could to sustain. It took considerably longer to go away. I mortgaged my home to keep us afloat. It was a very trying time. And you recognize that you're not necessarily desperate, you're resourceful. And you find ways to make it work.
Figure it out.
You figure it out.
What characteristics do you feel that you have that have made you successful thus far?
Well, I don't know if they're characteristics that are, I guess in my opinion, they're innate characteristics. They really are who you are. But I'm a believer. Every morning when I wake up, I say to myself, to thine own self be true today. You've heard me say that mm-hmm. often, and I believe in that. You must be true to who you are. And if you're authentic and true to yourself, it is likely that you will figure out what you need for you. But more than that, I am completely committed, disciplined, and consistent. There's no flexibility there when it comes to I'm at the gym at 3 a.m. consistently every day. I'm at the office by 7 a.m. consistently every day. I am every bit as much engaged in the business as is anyone. More often than not, people in my position are on the outskirts and they're more concerned about the revenue stream and how they get there. I'm quite involved in the business and I feel we lead by example. I want very much to be part of the business. And I feel that being a part of the business keeps me aware of how the business is moving, functioning, flowing, and what possibly the response on the consumer side would be like. And it's important to me to know that.
Well, I think you gave me probably the best advice of my life. And I always share this with anyone when they talk, and it's stay the course.
That's right.
When I personally wanted to, like, I want to go in this direction. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that. And you were like, stop, like, just stay the course, like, just stay at what you do and what you do good, or what you do well, and just stay there. And I think that was probably, you know, a catalyst, because I think you and I met probably, 2 years into my business, 2 or 3 years into my business.
Yes.
And we had a lengthy discussion about how to, you know, stay with it. And that was your piece of advice. And I actually give that to everyone when I talk to them. And I think that that attests to your ability to be able to, even during COVID, you know, find your resources, figure it out, but you just stayed that path. Like you didn't go anywhere else. You didn't shift your business. You just stayed the course of that.
I think we often spend too much time looking at our competitors or our peers, and we're striving to be what they might be or who they are, instead of recognizing just be the best you that you can be.
I think that's completely valuable advice.
I think it really is. Well.
Is there anything, you know, I'm sure there's a lot from the beginnings of your business that you would have done different. Are you happy with where things went that you didn't do different, or would there have been significant changes you would have made?
I think in the beginning, I was so eager to put people in seats. And as you mature in your business and you recognize it's not necessarily about filling seats, but it's putting people in the right place to succeed. And some perhaps get it sooner than others. It took me a bit longer. I was more concerned about putting people in seats. And now my purpose is everyone who sits in a seat is perfection in their field and their placement.
That's powerful. I think I just did a small consulting where that's what we did, right? We perfected the seat that they were sitting in to help them be more successful.
Necessary.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together. I'm here with Tony Acquaviva, and now we're stepping into the messy middle of entrepreneurship, scaling. Growth sounds exciting, but in reality, it can feel like losing control. More clients, more demands, more decisions, and more chaos. Tony has lived through the pressure, and his experience offers a roadmap for anyone feeling overwhelmed by the next stage. Scaling exposes every gap in your systems and leadership habits. This segment explores how Tony created structure, stability, and confidence while expanding a growing mortgage company. So Tony, in the last segment, we talked a little bit about your growth from 5 to 30, and now you're at hundreds of employees. And so most of our viewers are probably smaller businesses, but they want to scale, and they want advice and guidance on how they can scale and scale successfully. When you first started growing your business, what moment made you realize that things were getting chaotic?
That's rather simple to answer, because I was producing in addition to running each and every department.
So you individually were also working and producing at the beginning.
Okay. Yes. I think what you need to recognize as quickly as you can is you are not capable of doing everything, and you are not knowledgeable in every aspect of your business. Hiring the right people to take the reins of the departments, especially the departments where you don't excel, and allow them to run the business. And I think relinquishing control is extremely difficult for most people, especially type A, get mm-hmm. in the trenches and make things happen kind of people. That was huge. The pressure that I have alleviated from my being is worth its weight in gold. And the trust that I have in my peers and my team is absolutely unconditional.
And so when you realize that it was chaotic, or you realize that, hey, we're about to grow, what is the message you gave to your team?
Well, we had a mission, and the mission was originally to build the platform. So we focused solely on growth. We worried less about revenue, more about growth. And I think what we wanted to do was we wanted to create the momentum, we wanted to create the feeling, we wanted to give people the desire and the need for growth. Once we developed the growth and we achieved what we needed to achieve, then we started to change our focus, and we guided our focus more into efficiency. I don't know that you can do it all at the same time, so we chose to compartmentalize. And, you know, I have an expression or a saying, you're nobody striving to be somebody to everybody, and you're trying to do it without anybody. And that's what the message I gave to the team. We're the little guy in the sea, you know, and we're the little fish in the sea. We're the choo-choo that needed to get where it needed to go. And it's a stage and it's a process. And you stay that course and you achieve your end result. It always works. It may not always work as quickly as you wanted or exactly the way you wanted, but if you stay the course and you stay committed to your purpose, you will achieve.
Well, and I think, you know, me, I'm a perfectionist, and you're similar in that aspect. Yes. And so we expect things to go a certain way all the time. And it doesn't, it never does. And so when that happens, when it's not perfection, I think is where we lose sight of what our mission and our purpose is, because we're trying to, what our mission and purpose are, which is why we jump to, oh, this is so chaotic, we can't do it, we're not going to be able to, because it didn't go the way that we wanted to in the beginning. What advice can you give someone that is like a perfectionist, that wants things done a certain way, that wants things to happen a certain way, and it doesn't? But in that scaling, in that growth, you have to have the expectation that it's not going to go the way it's supposed to.
You need to take a step back. And you need to look at different outcomes that could possibly be your end result. And they should be varied and they should be different and there should be multiple options so that you're best prepared and you don't have to look at it as though the outcome you wanted didn't happen. The outcome that you predicted was achieved, but possibly one of the options that you chose. I think it makes the pressure less. It makes the interest more interesting because you're forced to come out with multiple options. And again, these are all acquired and achieved skills that you develop as you're in your entrepreneurship. And to me, that's tremendous. I can perceive multiple outcomes before we engage into a new venture, a new platform, a new program. We want, and I think it's hugely critical and helpful.
What leadership qualities helped you stay calm in the scaling?
I don't know that I'm actually calm. I think by my nature is not actually calm. I'm more of a nervous guy by nature. I worry about everything, but I turn that into a positive, quite honestly. I think that the energy that you create can be a stimulus to get you where you need to go, or it could be a crutch. And I tend to bundle my energy and it makes me resourceful. I'm a considerable thinker. I spend a fair amount of time thinking, often not sleeping, not good, but not sleeping.
Very much aware.
Very much aware. And to me, it's a motivation. So I use it to my benefit. I don't choose to look at something as a crutch or a disarmament. I look at it as an asset that I utilize to get me where I need to go.
So you focus that worry, that anxiety on what you can do better in your business, what you can do better in your life, and that's where you focus it.
Manifest and create outcomes. I'm a total believer that what you believe will be.
Oh yeah, 100%. And the part of scaling that usually worries or scares most people is the hiring. So the question usually is, at what point do I hire if I'm scaling? At what point do I bring in another body where you know that you're scaling, but you're not sure if you have the money, but you need this person because you can't scale without these? I mean, these are questions I get all the time. What are your thoughts on that? Like, at what point?
Well, I'll share with you something that is probably not often felt by people in my role, but I'm really not a good judge of character in a work environment. I'm the guy who, if you tell me that you're capable of doing this, I say, great, when can you start? And then you start and it's realized that
you were not good at what you do.
Clearly. So I don't choose to take that role any longer. Each department head chooses to hire whom he or she wishes. They decide upon the credentials. Only if it's a position that I have to sign off on will I interview the person. And that's just for the sake of being acquainted. I like to make myself available to everyone on the team. As difficult as it is, we do have a fairly open door policy about that. So I try to meet as many people as I can, but no more shall I hire. I will only approve of your hire for reasons completely unrelated to the role, just culture. I'm more concerned about, do you understand the culture that we've created? I feel that a skill can be learned, an attitude and a culture is less easily taught.
Oh yeah, absolutely is not. Just from my experience, you know, in my book, I do talk a lot about the hiring process, and part of that is hiring more for soft skills, more mm-hmm. for your character traits and your abilities versus the skills that you have. Because I can teach you how to write, I can teach you how to, you know, read, sure. I can teach you to do all these things, but I cannot teach you to be a good person. I cannot teach you to have grit. I can't teach you to figure it out. Like, you have to have those abilities. Would you agree?
I totally agree with you.
And I think we've talked a few times about why you're not in the hiring
yes.
anymore. I think we've had those discussions.
I believe everybody is to be trusted until they prove me wrong. It might be great on a personal level, but it doesn't work in an employment environment.
No, because it can really detriment your culture.
That's right.
Because it affects everybody on the team, not just you.
That's right.
And so what habits have helped you as a leader?
Well, I don't believe that I could serve as a leader in my company until I've served myself first. Some might look at that as selfish, but I choose to just start earlier to make sure that my needs are met first. So I'm not infringing upon company time. I'm handling that in advance, prior to company time. But you must nurture and take care of your health, your well-being, in order for you to serve others. To me, in order to lead, you lead by example.
Well, I think there's a few books out there on that exact philosophy. So, Tony, where can people learn more about Premier Mortgage or connect with you directly?
Well, we have a website. We have Premier Mortgage. And we also have the real company name is NQM Funding. The retail DBA is Premier Mortgage because we handle every channel. We're correspondent, we're wholesale, we're bulk, we're delegated, non-delegated, and we're retail. So they can go to www.premiermortgage.com or premiermtg.com.
Okay. And do you have any social medias or?
We have an entire marketing department that handles social media everywhere.
Okay. All right.
Every platform.
Check out Premier Mortgage, especially if you want a mortgage. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together. Rejection can trigger self-doubt, fear, and insecurity, yet it often becomes the turning point that elevates a leader. This conversation uncovers how Tony rebuilt confidence after setbacks and how viewers can do the same. So Tony, we've talked a lot about, you know, how you started your business, scaling your business, but let's talk about rejection. Because it happens in all aspects of our lives. But tell us about a few times in your life that you've been rejected.
Wow. Yes, rejection. Especially as a young boy. I started working when I was 10 or 11 in a pizza place around the corner from the house. I wanted to save money to buy my first car by the time I was 16. And I was working for a family. They were wonderful. I started out as a busboy. I worked my way into the kitchen, dishwashing, pizza making, cooking, etc. It was a wonderful experience. They sold the business. The new family that took over was really not restaurateurs. They weren't. They really were in an awkward place for themselves. And I came in, I had just come from school. I was very involved in school and I hadn't shaved. So I must have had a little stubble. And they made a comment about why I hadn't shaved. And I simply said, I just came from school and I really don't think it's affecting my work or my job. And by the end of the day, they said, we're no longer going to need you. So I left. Within 3 days, I had another job. But that was my first form of what it felt like to be rejected. And it isn't fun and it isn't enjoyable by any means. But again, I use that to make me stronger, more desiring to achieve my goals, to make things happen. And soon thereafter, I was leaving for college. So the job that I had afterward was just for a short time. And then I was going away to school.
Well, and I think, you know, rejection's in every aspect of our lives, right? It's business, personal, going to the DMV, you know, so many areas there's rejection. Some people just don't pick themselves back up after that rejection. What thoughts went through your mind in some of the rejection that you've had that you had to overcome? Like, did you ever feel like you weren't enough or that maybe you needed to work on things within yourself a little bit more than other things?
I think you go through stages just like anything else. Rejection is hurtful and you internalize it and you go through the stages. What did I do wrong? Was I not right for the role? Was I not smart enough? Was I not strong enough? Was I not successful enough? And that's all good. I think it's important that you go through the process and learn more about yourself. And hopefully more people will utilize that as an opportunity to be introspective. I think the outcome now, even in my life at this stage, there are moments and times when I simply will back out because I know that I'm not going to be able to fulfill that the way possibly the person asking me to wants me to, or perhaps the way I want to fulfill it. And I think that's okay. And again, it boils down to just being honest with yourself, to thine own self, just be true. As I get older, there are things that I did before that I'm not really going to be able to do any longer. And it's okay.
It is. It is. And, you know, isn't the, you know, rejection is a law of numbers, right? Like you can be told no 100 times and then that 101 time you get a yes. And some of us have experienced rejection on, you know, different levels. And I think that Michael Jordan said it, that you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's right.
Because everybody's rejection is fear, right? They have fear in the rejection. And it makes them feel as though they aren't good enough and they're not going to make it. And I think that people are scared of rejection and that it shouldn't be something that they're scared of. What steps did you make sure that you would never face the same type of rejection again?
More people than not consider what I do sales.
Okay.
I don't think of what I do as sales. And I think that has been a huge benefit to my growth. I simply say that I wasn't able to serve that person.
Okay.
It's not like I lost the sale. I wasn't able to serve that person. Someone else may be able to serve him or her better than I was able to serve him for whatever reason. And that's the mantra that I profess at the company. We don't sell anything here. We serve people. And as long as we continue to serve, we will prosper. But when you're trying to sell someone something rather than serve them, everything changes. Your mentality changes, your body language changes, the interaction you have, the tonality of your voice, everything's different when you're serving.
Yeah, because I think if you look at the sales role, most people always, when they hear sales, they think of used car salesmen, right? Because that's been a stereotype forever. So I like that you change that mentality from, no, I serve, and this is how I serve, this is how we serve, and this is how we're going to move forward. I also know that, like, early on in most businesses, companies will, or individuals, because most of us start our business as just an individual, we tend to take as much business as we can get from whoever we get. And sometimes that tends to provide a lot more rejection than we thought it would, because you can't serve all those people, or they're the wrong type of people for your business. So it's a different type of rejection, where it's rejection that's possibly going to hurt your reputation, because you're just taking on so many clients that you really don't need. And then you become more decisive the more decisive and selective as you grow your business. So would you have advice for someone who is starting their business or in the middle of their business, and the rejection is a little different? It looks like it from clients versus customers from the public.
I say take as much business as you possibly can, but make certain that if you are not able to accommodate that person, you know almost immediately.
Okay.
So the answer is swift and real. It's far more appreciated by the person at the other side, on the other side of the desk, if you're honest and candid quickly. When you delay and prolong a negative outcome, it reflects poorly on you.
I would agree. I do. And, you know, sometimes in industries, especially like a service-based industry, it's based on reputation.
That's right.
Right? Completely reputation.
And if you were to go out into the field now and went to a builder's office and they said, you know, we've sent your loan to Tony and he can't do it, so we're going to have to cancel your contract, because if Tony says it can't be done, it's not likely that it's going to get done.
That's incredible.
That's
an incredible reputation.
That's the reputation you want.
Yes. 100%. What should someone do today if they are afraid of being turned down?
Afraid to be turned down?
Yeah, they're afraid of the rejection.
I think they need to go for considerably more interviews or put themselves in a situation where they are rejected, because then they're not experiencing what life really is. And life is not easy. And it's not often designed
to get everything that you want.
It isn't. And it isn't meant to be that way. What's the expression that you often hear? You don't always get the people in your life you want, but you get the people that you need.
Yes.
So that you can grow.
100%.
And again, when I was younger, I don't know that I would have been as wise perhaps as I am now. But you mature and you learn and you recognize you're a human being like everybody else, and you're not everybody's flavor for whatever the reason. And you just have to accept that you're not supposed to be everything to everyone, but as much as you can to as many as you can.
So with that same thought process, what about individuals who are trying to get a mortgage, mm-hmm. and they're afraid of rejection? What are your thoughts for them and your advice?
Well, fortunately, we are a product abundant company, one of the largest product lenders in the country. So we often find an outlet. And if we can't find an outlet, we can put them on a path. If you do this by this month or this year, you'll be ready to purchase. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to save. This is what you need to show. And we'll give them a path or a plan. I think if somebody's truly committed to getting or experiencing home ownership, they're going to take the advice of someone who's taken the time to lay out a plan for them.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities. And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together. Being underestimated can either shrink you or sharpen you. This conversation explores how Tony earned respect, proved his value, and built a career anchored in excellence and heart, and how viewers can take that same path. So Tony, we've talked a lot about, we talked about rejection, scaling, building a business, but let's talk about being underestimated. You talked at the beginning that you did things in your industry that nobody else was doing. Did other people underestimate you, other companies, other places that you went to interview?
I don't know if that was my experience specifically, but there are always going to be competitors who wish your failure. And that too is a motivation, if you choose to make it a motivation. I don't often know or focus on what is going on outside of our company, my company. I tend to be more focused on how we do things, why we do things, and the way we do things. And I think if you spend less time outside of your environment and more time nurturing your own environment, I think it'll serve you better. I think it's important that you worry less about external stuff and focus on developing the internal stuff.
You know, we talk a lot about that with social media, right? And how people focus on what other people are doing so much, and that they lose sight of, you know, who they are because they want to be what those individuals are. And you don't know what they went through to get to the point. I think it's the same with businesses as well.
Fair.
You see very large businesses that are extremely successful. I always use Amazon, right? Started in a garage and it was nothing, like it was $0, to now it's this billion-dollar organization, and everybody only judges the billion-dollar organization. They don't understand that the process that it took to get there, and that everybody told Jeff Bezos that he was crazy for doing an online bookstore. But look where it has been. So I think it's everyone judges by one set of facts and or one set of view versus seeing the whole story through.
But we are a culture who loves success, but we love failure equally as much. But we love the revival. We live for that here in our country more so than in most cultures. Mm-hmm. We love to see somebody fail, and we love to see them come back and soar. So it's good and bad. I just think that we beat ourselves up far too often, me included. We just do. I didn't have a good workout that day, or I didn't do as many reps as I should. That we always look for ways to beat ourselves up instead of nurture and enhance ourselves.
I would agree.
And we need to spend more time doing that. And it's really not difficult. Like everything else, you start to think things. Things that you think become habit. Habit becomes your lifestyle and who you are. So just spend your time positive, and your outcome will be positive, and your life will be more positive. Of course, you're going to have negativity in your life. But as a rule, your human becomes positive. And it's a great feeling.
It absolutely is. And I think when you stop listening to the noise, it helps you become more positive because you stay the course, right? You're just on your path. You're not on anybody else's path. You're not shooting for anybody else's journey. You're only shooting for yours.
And everybody should get a pet. I'm serious. When you have a responsibility and you have to nurture something that isn't a human being who can eventually grow to take care of him or herself, it keeps life in perspective. It sounds simple, but if you take that challenge seriously, the impact and the growth is exponential.
And you guys have to know Tony's pet, Tony's Bentley, follows him everywhere, sleeps with him, goes everywhere with him. He's fantastic, super well-trained.
But you're responsible for mm-hmm. that life, and it has a tremendous impact on who you are.
So get a pet, adopt a pet from a reputable place. What do you feel being underestimated does to people, and what does it do to their confidence?
Well, again, I think it's about who you are as a person and how you choose to manifest that feeling.
Yeah, I'm going to prove you wrong. Like, that's my philosophy. Like, I'm just going to prove you wrong.
And you know, what's the worst thing that can happen is you don't succeed at that. But eventually you'll succeed, but you may not the first time, maybe not even the second time. It's okay to fail or to lose as long as from that you learned and you grew. It's trite. You know, people say it often, but it really is true. You have choices in life and you have to make the choice.
Do you think there's a point at where you try and try and try and it doesn't work out that you should stop?
Perhaps.
And go somewhere else?
I would think so. Perhaps you're in the wrong seat and you need to find the right seat.
I sometimes think about that when I'm with entrepreneurs or with business owners, and we keep going in circles, like fully in circles, like round and round and round and round. And I'm having that conversation and I'm like, I just don't know that this is for you, right? Like, that's what you think in your head. But sometimes with individuals, you can't tell them because they just will never believe anything that you say. But what would be your advice to a friend or a colleague that you know, and you're like, okay, it's about time that you...
Well, I tend to be very frank and very open, but trying to be as polite as you can. But I don't believe in sugarcoating or snowflaking anything. You need to know. You ask me a question, I presume that you're looking for my opinion sincerely, and you're going to get it.
I've been on the recipient of that. So do you ever force an action to help somebody see their value?
Oh, yes. I think it's important. I, being Italian, am very quick to get heated fast if something's not going the way I want it to go. And I would immediately call someone out. Less likely now, more likely to say, explain to me why you chose to do things that way. Perhaps I'll learn something from that I could use as a training opportunity for you. I'm saying this to myself. And if your answer is, I don't know why, it's just the way I did it, then it's going to be an opportunity for me to say, well, perhaps you would consider doing it this way, and this should yield you the result that you're looking for.
Okay. And how do you make sure today that people recognize what you bring to the table?
I think your actions speak for themselves, and you lead by example. Again, so fundamental and basic, but so few follow through.
And do you sit at tables with like-minded individuals, or do you like sitting at tables with a vast view of perspective?
I don't believe that I should rule. I believe that we as a team make a decision together. Whatever that decision is, each of us is responsible for the outcome and accountable for the outcome, as opposed to, well, this is the way Tony wanted it done. No, this is what we decided, and therefore we are all responsible to achieve the outcome we're looking for.
Okay. And what can someone do right now if they feel no one is noticing their hard work?
I would imagine the first thing you want to do is go to your manager and ask, what can I do to improve my work? Because if you go to your manager and say, I'm disappointed that I'm not being recognized for my work, I would imagine you're not likely going to get the outcome you're looking for. I want to make sure that I'm being utilized to the best of my abilities. And is there any advice or anything specific that you want me to do to assure you that I'm fulfilling the job that I want? But I think a good manager, if they're managing their team properly, they should affirm the behavior of the members of their team on a somewhat regular basis. It's just good for morale.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, how do you recognize your team so that nobody ever feels like underestimating
We get
them?
Together every Thursday as a management team, and we sit around the table and we have discussions. And we try to be lighthearted when it's appropriate, and then we try to be serious when it's appropriate, but everything is done in 1 hour. I don't believe in
dragging it on.
There's no reason for that. We go through what we need to go through 1 hour. If it's greater than an hour, I'm up and I'm out of there, and they're just sitting looking at themselves. There's no reason for that. Brevity is the soul of wit, as Shakespeare would say, and there's a reason for it. Because if you want to hold somebody's attention, and we're all busy, we all have things to do, so let's get on with it. Get to the point, be specific, but everything boils down to the people you choose to surround yourself with. Everything does.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree with that. It does. Tony, this has been incredibly inspiring. Where can people connect with you and learn more about your work?
They can reach me by cell phone if they choose to. I'm more than delighted to share or offer any information if you'd like.
Okay.
I'm delighted. My cell phone is 954-328-7662. And they're welcome to email me at tony@premiermtg.com.
All right.